ghetto of the North. Radio. We have come from the great universities and the flourishing suburbs. We have come from Appalachian poverty and from conscience-stricken wealth. But we have come. We have come here because we share a common concern for the moral health of our nation. We have come because our eyes have seen
when we
the
heed
official glory and
when
glimmer
the world
of our society and observe the coming
one.
Of judgment. Like
there
the
are people dying.
We have read the handwriting of the scroll. We have seen nations weighing in the mountains of distress and power of poverty.
We can go on. Day by day, life doesn't
move. We have seen the
change.
As a dark power,
we
in the affairs of man.
God's great big family. And the truth,
we are
you know, love is all we
need. We are the monsters who sit and Washington, who staked our lives on the American dream with those powers to men in December here campaigned to
make a choice
in the 1964.
We're saving our own lives. So they know that someone cares, and their lives will be stronger and free.
That dark yesterday,
the
man's
now it is
hard to escape.
We are the world.
A prayer.
We are the children.
Our hopes have been blasted.
We are the ones to make a brighter day.
So
let's start giving.
The promise of a great society.
Oh, just to make it.
I learned just to have faith in America and in life tonight. Legislative assemblies have adopted Nero as their patron saint and are bent on fiddling while our cities burn. Even when the people persist and in the face of great obstacles develop indigenous leadership and self-help approaches to their problems, and finally tread the forest of bureaucracy to obtain existing government funds, the corrupt political order seeks to crush even this beginning of hope. The case of CDGM in Mississippi is the most publicized example, but it is a story repeated many times across our nation. Our own experience here in Chicago is especially painfully present. After an enthusiastic approval by HEW's Department of Adult Education, SCLC began an adult literacy project to aid 1,000 young men and women who have been pushed out of overcrowded ghetto schools and obtaining basically literacy skills prerequisite to receiving jobs. We had an agreement with A&P stores for 750 jobs through FCLC's job program, Operation Breadbasket, and had recruited over 500 pupils the first week. At that point, Congressman Kuchinski and the Daily Machine intervened and demanded that Washington cut off our funds or channel them through the machine-controlled poverty program in Chicago. Now we have no problem with administrative supervision, but we do have a desire to be independent of machine control and the Democratic Party patronage network. But this desire for a politically independent approach to the needs of our brothers, our funds are being stopped as of September 15th, and a very meaningful program discontinued. Yes, the hour is dark. Evil comes forth in the guise of good. It is a time of double talk when men in high places have a high blood pressure of deceptive rhetoric and an anemia of concrete performance. We cry out against welfare handouts to the poor, but generously approve an oil depletion allowance to make the rich richer. Six Mississippi plantations receive more than $1 million a year not to plant cotton, but no provision is made to feed the tenant farmer who is put out of work by the government subsidy. The crowning achievement in hypocrisy must go to those staunch Republicans and Democrats of the Midwest and West who were given land by our government when they came here as immigrants from Europe. They were given education through the land-grant colleges. They were provided with agricultural agents to keep them abreast of farming trends. They were granted low-interest loans to aid in the mechanization of their farms. And now that they have succeeded in becoming successful, they are paid not to farm. And these are the same people who now say to black people whose ancestors were brought to this country in chains and who were emancipated in 1863 without being given land to cultivate or bread to eat, that they must pull themselves up by their own bootstraps. What they truly advocate is socialism for the rich, capitalism for the poor. I wish that I could say that this is just a passing phase in the cycle of our nation's life. Certainly times of war, times of reaction throughout the society. But I suspect that we are now experiencing the coming to the surface of a triple-pronged sickness that has been lurking within our body politic from its very beginning. That is the sickness of racism, excessive materialism, and militarism. Not only is this our nation's dilemma, it is the plague of Western civilization. As early as 1906, W.E.B. Du Bois prophesied that the problem of the 20th century will be the problem of the color line. Now, as we stand two-thirds into this crucial period of history, we know full well that racism is still the hound of hell, which dogs the tracks of our civilization. Ever since the birth of our nation, white America has had a schizophrenic personality on the question of race. She has been torn between selves, a self in which she proudly professed the great principles of democracy, and a self in which she madly practiced the antithesis of democracy. This tragic duality has produced a strange indecisiveness and ambivalence toward the Negro, causing America to take a step backward simultaneously with every step forward on the question of racial justice. To be at once attracted to the Negro and repelled by him, to love and to hate him. There has never been a solid, unified, and determined thrust to make justice a reality for Afro-Americans. The step backward has a new name today. It is called the white backlash. But the white backlash is nothing new. It is a surfacing of old prejudices, hostilities, and ambivalences that have always been there. It was caused neither by the cry of black power, nor by the unfortunate recent wave of riots in our cities. The white backlash of today is rooted in the same problem that has characterized America ever since the black man landed in chains on the shores of this nation. This does not imply that all white Americans are racist. Far from it, many white people have, through a deep moral compulsion, fought long and hard for racial justice. Nor does it mean that America has made no progress in her attempt to cure the body politic of the disease of racism, or that the dogma of racism has not been considerably modified in recent years. However, for the good of America, it is necessary to refute the idea that the dominant ideology in our country, even today, is freedom and equality, while racism is just an occasional departure from the norm on the part of a few bigoted extremists. Racism can well be that corrosive evil that will bring down the curtain on Western civilization. Arnold Toynbee has said that some 26 civilizations have risen upon the face of the earth. Almost all of them have descended into the junk heaps of destruction. The decline and fall of these civilizations, according to Toynbee, was not caused by external invasion, but by internal decay. They failed to respond creatively to the challenges impinging upon them. If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men. Second aspect of our afflicted society is extreme materialism. An Asian writer has portrayed our dilemma in candid terms. He says, call your thousand material devices labor-saving machinery. Yet you are forever busy. With the multiplying of your machinery, you grow increasingly fatigued, anxious, nervous, dissatisfied. Whatever you have, you want more. And wherever you are, you want to go somewhere else. Your devices are neither time-saving nor soul-saving machinery. They are so many sharp spurs which urge you on to invent more machinery and to do more business. This tells us something about our civilization that cannot be cast aside as a prejudiced charge by an Eastern thinker who is jealous of Western prosperity. We cannot escape the indictment. This does not mean that we must turn back the clock of scientific progress. No one can overlook the wonders that science has wrought for our lives. The automobile will not abdicate in favor of the horse and buggy, of the train in favor of the stagecoach, of the tractor in favor of the hand plow, of the scientific method in favor of ignorance and superstition. But our moral lag must be redeemed. When scientific power outruns moral power, we end up with guided missiles and misguided men. When we foolishly maximize the minimum and minimize the maximum, we sign the warrant for our own day of doom. It is this moral lag in our thing-oriented society that blinds us to the human realities around us, encourages us in the greed and exploitation which creates the sector of poverty in the midst of wealth. Again, we have deluded ourselves into believing the myth that capitalism grew and prospered out of the Protestant ethic of hard work and sacrifice. The fact is that capitalism was built on the exploitation and suffering of black slaves. And continues to thrive on the exploitation of the poor, both black and white, both here and abroad. If Negroes and poor whites do not participate in the free flow of wealth within our economy, they will forever be poor, giving their energy, their talents, and their limited funds to the consumer market, but reaping few benefits and services in return. The way to end poverty is to end the exploitation of the poor, ensure them a fair share of the government's services and the nation's resources. I proposed recently that a national agency be established to provide employment for everyone needing it. Nothing is more socially inexcusable than unemployment in this age. In the 30s, when the nation was bankrupt, it instituted such an agency, the WPA. In the present conditions of a nation glutted with resources, it is barbarous to condemn people desiring work to soul-sapping inactivity and poverty. I am convinced that even this one massive act of concern would do more than all the state police and armies of the nation to quell riots and steal hatreds. As it is in our materialistic culture, does not possess the statesmanship necessary to do it. Victor Hugo could have been thinking of 20th century America when he wrote, "There's always more misery among the lower classes than there is humanity in the higher classes." The time has come for America to face the inevitable choice between materialism and humanism. We must devote at least as much to our children's education and the health of the poor as we do to the care of our automobiles and the building of beautiful, impressive hotels. We must also realize that the problems of racial injustice and economic injustice cannot be solved without a radical redistribution of political and economic power. We must further recognize that the ghetto is a domestic colony. Black people must develop programs that will aid in the transfer of power and wealth into the hands of residents of the ghetto so that they may, in reality, control their own destinies. This is the meaning of new politics. People of goodwill in the larger community must support the black man in this effort. The final phase of our national sickness is the disease of militarism. Nothing more clearly demonstrates our nation's abuse of military power than our tragic adventure in Vietnam. This war has played havoc with the destiny of the entire world. It has torn up the Geneva Agreement. It has seriously impaired the United Nations. It has exacerbated the hatred between continents and, worse still, between races. It has frustrated our development of home at home, telling our own underprivileged citizens that we place insatiable military demands above their most critical needs. It has greatly contributed to the forces of reaction in America and strengthened the military-industrial complex. And it has practically destroyed Vietnam and left thousands of American and Vietnamese youth maimed and mutilated, and expose the whole world to the risk of nuclear warfare. Above all, the war in Vietnam has revealed what Senator Fulbright calls our nation's arrogance of power. We are arrogant in professing to be concerned about the freedom of foreign nations while not setting our own house in order. Many of our senators and congressmen vote joyously to appropriate billions of dollars for the war in Vietnam. And many of these same senators and congressmen vote loudly against the fair housing bill to make it possible for a Negro veteran of Vietnam to purchase a decent home. We are Negro soldiers to kill on foreign battlefields, but offer little protection for their relatives from beatings and killings in our own South. We are willing to make the Negro 100% of a citizen in warfare, but reduce him to 50% of a citizen on American soil. No war in our nation's history has ever been so violative of our conscience, our national interests, and so destructive of our moral standing before the world. No enemy has ever been able to cause such damage to us as we inflict upon ourselves. The inexorable decay of our urban centers has flared into terrifying domestic conflict, as the pursuit of foreign war absorbs our wealth and energy. Squalor and poverty scar our cities, as our military might destroys cities in a far-off land to support oligarchy to intervene in domestic conflict. The president who cherishes consensus for peace has intensified the war. In answer to a cry to stop the war, it has brought tauntingly to 1 minute flying time from China to a moment before the midnight of world conflagration. We are offered a tax for war instead of a plan for peace. Men of reason should no longer debate the merits.
Dr. King was talking about what happening now. Trillions of dollars is spent in war over in Crimea. One of the things here in America, poor people campaign, the rich getting richer and the poor getting poor. And ain't nobody able to say nothing. As I look tonight, we're talking about poor people campaign. Black, white, brown, red is suffering. When you go to the grocery store, you suffer. When you go to the gas pump, you suffer. And the Republicans and Democrats passed a trillion dollars for the war, but no money for Chicago, for Louisiana, for Mississippi, Arkansas. We're at a pace now where America is destroying itself on the inside. Where the ex-president have talked about taking over the government, that's treason. Let me say it again. That's treason. If Obama had did what Trump did, he'd been in prison right now. What Dr. King was saying in Chicago, when the Blackstone Rangers and the Vito and also the gangster disciples cooked up with Dr. King, they got prison, and some Black Panthers got killed because this government will not, and they in jail now. I want to share this with you right now. R. Kelly did what he said he did, but he got 30 years. But the white woman, saying that, went all over the country and recruited girls 16 and 17 and brought them, and for the president and the governors and people to have sex with them, she got 20 years. We're talking about right now where we stand here in America. Yes, it's been 100 years. We got a black woman at the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court have turned the hand back on life. So what I'm saying to you tonight, we're standing where war means more than feed hungry babies. War means more than feeding people that is starving. I want you to look at when Dr. King was talking, it reminded me back to the people campaign, poor people campaign. We got to resurrect the poor people campaign. It is not about politics, not about church. It's poor people. Now, they have moved out the middle class. Ain't no middle class. You're rich or you're poor. When you go to the store, if you ain't got no money, because the government is not giving money no more. They're sending money for war. And all the meetings that they meet with all those countries, ain't nobody saying, we need money for Chicago, Detroit, California, Mississippi, Arkansas, Louisiana. Nobody said that. They said, well, we're going to send the Republican and Democrat, they can agree on sending money overseas and sending soldiers to die, but they can't agree on feeding people right here in America. They can't agree on building houses and jobs for people right here. And the blood of the killing of our children, Sandy Hook, they died. Down in Texas, they died. Buffalo, New York, black people died. And just the other day, a track patrol load of people died coming from Mexico. Look, poor people, they ain't rich folks, looking for a better life. And the government ain't said nothing about it. We are in a problem. I want to let you know we got a problem going on. That if we don't come together as poor people, we're going to die. We got people that are homeless. People have not seen a doctor or a dentist. And you right now, whatever you buy, milk, bread, or stuff, is sky high. Ain't nobody said nothing about bringing the gas price down. The president can write an executive order that all gas can be $3 a gallon. But it's not helping poor people. Now, one of the things that's going on now, we're in the midst of storms and floods. We're in the midst of people got assault rifles shooting citizens because their mind is messed up. And I want to say to you tonight, we're talking about the Poor People Campaign. And I'm going to get ready after listening to Dr. King. You know, we got to go back to Poor People Campaign. We got to go back to get black people, white people, red people, poor people that starving right before our eyes, sleeping outdoors, have no money because the big banks and the big car companies getting subsidies. They call us welfare, but they get money and keep the economy going. The banks won't give loans out to poor people. So poor people caught in that you say, you ain't no middle class now. You rich or you're poor. If you're poor, you're going to start. We have to come together, ready poor people to vote, and be able to get these people out of the White House that's not doing what they're doing for the people. And that's one of the things that we got to look at. And we got to do that, and we have to work. Yes, it's time for a change. Treason is in there. The young lady came and testified. They were fighting. They covered all that up. And NBC, ABC, they didn't play that. They didn't talk about it. Ain't nobody saying, ain't nobody going to jail. Here's R. Kelly go to jail. Here's Trump rape women, do everything, and don't go to jail. So if the Justice Department going to do right, it got to look at this situation because we got a problem. We're destroying ourselves from the inside. People are right now have nowhere to stay. People that is hungry have no food, nowhere to lodge, sleeping outdoors under bridges, eating out of garbage cans. And we send in trillions of dollars, over to another country that don't have nothing to do with us. We're jacking up other countries when people in Mississippi is starving and people in Alabama and Georgia are starving, just is making it. And robbing Peter to pay Paul, we got congressmen that would not speak on that. They want to speak about something else. But that's where we at now. Whether you understand, I was talking to Bright Star this evening earlier, and a lady called me and said, Bright Star had to find some food for the little folks. The government ain't getting no food out. They're not doing nothing for poor people, not black people, poor people. When you talk about poor, you're talking about the rich and the poor. Right now, we're in the midst of poor people starving. Babies ain't getting nutrition. And the education situation, everything is folded. And we're talking about explosion in our government. They turn their heads. Anytime the government says, oh, okay, assault rifles, they would not vote on it. And they're making all kind of money. So it's important for the poor people of America to come together. This is my story. This is my song. And the song is the equality for all the people. So I'm saying to you, when you go get a loaf of bread, you're paying $5 to $10 for it. Go get gas, $5 a gallon, and ain't coming down. Because ain't nobody speaking for poor people. So we have to start tonight, Poor People Campaign. Let me say it again. In your churches, in your block club, So I'm part of the Poor People Campaign, and we're not going to let the rich get richer. Trillions of dollars on a campaign. No money for, and they're closing stores. So the poor in the black neighborhood become a deficit. You can't get milk. You can't get bread for your children. So our government is not speaking to that. They're speaking to violence over in Ukraine where bombings and killings going on. And those people are coming here looking for jobs, and you're not taking care of the people that's already here. I wish I had somebody know what I'm talking about. Where is the minister? Where is the rabbi? Where is the imam? Where is the church folk? Where is the leadership? The poor people got to come together. People are dying. And you saying the man got a gun, he's shooting. He ain't got nothing to do but shoot. Robbing and stealing, killing and murder. And our government have not addressed what's going on. So I want you to look tonight and understand it's somebody tomorrow, but it could be you, put out of your home. The bank, the foreclosed on you, you done paid the bill. Young lady called me, said her car all tore up. And the dealership said, we can't do nothing about it. But they got our money. Poor getting poor and the rich getting richer. And you said, well, I'm in a good place. You're not in a good place. You're rich as you're poor. So I'm talking about the Poor People Campaign. I'm talking about caring people together, poor people. I'm talking about black people, white people, brown people, red people, poor people. The poor people of America got to rise up and tell Washington, cut it out or cut us in. And that's what, and those politicians, you know what they're doing? They're tweaking. Yeah, they tweaking. You know what tweaking is? They ain't doing nothing but tweaking. Act like they're doing something, and the poor getting poor. If you're in Detroit, California, Atlanta, Georgia, Florida, wherever you might be, they're tweaking. Because they're not standing up for the people. So the night is serious. It's a divine word. And the divine word is tax, love, joy, and the tax for poor people to stand up. Poor people. Now, you might have a house. You're still poor. You got to pay the insurance on it, the tax. And the people don't want, when your house tears up, they don't even want to. The insurance company don't even want to give you no money on your house to get it fixed. They go, well, that's the wind blowing. But back to back. So what I'm saying to you, the politician got to stop tweaking. You know what tweaking is. You ask your politician, is you tweaking or are you working for other people? I want you to get ready tonight and put in your spirit that I'm going to get ready to start in my neighborhood. I'm going to get three people. We're going to be on the campaign, Poor People Campaign. We're going to register people to vote. We're getting ready to turn. Dr. King did it back in the day, but we got to go. What Dr. King set up have failed. People won't do it. Everybody doing their own thing. So because Dr. King was for poor people. He was for feeding the hungry, clothing the naked. And that have went away. Now, you can't even get in the store. Right now, you can't even get a piece of bread. Ain't nobody giving nothing away. If you poor, you're going to stay poor. If you rich, you're going to stay rich because the rich looking out for the rich. Nobody is speaking out for the poor. So we got to start the Poor People Campaign all over again to get things started where we might be able to do some things to make things work. That's important for us to start the Poor People Campaign. It's important for us to get started with the Poor People Campaign. And once we get the Poor People Campaign started, we can start to open up some doors where people might be able to get jobs and the government be able to give. They don't even want to give out no stimulus or nothing. So they let things stay the same. So we still caught up with evil we caught up with the evil of the world, and the evil of the world keeping us down. So we got to let go and let God, because president, vice president, everybody looking out for the rich. Nobody speaking for those that in jail, those that are homeless, those that are looking for a way. Ain't nobody speaking out with them. This is Dr. King's speech, April the 3rd, 1968, before he passed, before he was assassinated.
And then thought about myself, I wondered who he was talking about. It's always good to have your closest friend and associate to say something good about you. And Ralph Abernathy is the best friend.
God bless you tonight. Get ready.
I'm delighted to see.
We're starting a new movement, and the movement is Poor People Campaign. Join the Poor People Campaign. Lisa, I want you to be one of the chairmen. And Lois, I want you to be one of the chairmen. Bryce, I want you to be one of the chairmen of Poor People Campaign. And I was talking to Keith Isley. He got some women that ready up in South Dakota to be part of the Poor People Campaign as we build it.
You know, if I was spending time with the possibility of taking a kind
don't forget,
of general and panoramic
we own
view of the whole
7 days a week. You got to need plant a seed because your seed will carry you to another level. We need to come together.
Which age would you like to live in? I would take my mental flight by Egypt. And I would watch God's children in their magnificent trek from the dark dungeons of Egypt through a rugged across the Red Sea, through the wilderness, on toward the Promised Land. And in spite of its magnificence, I wouldn't stop there. I would move on by Greece and take my mind to Mount Olympus. And I would see Plato, Aristotle, Socrates, Euripides, and Aristophanes, the symbol around the Parthenon. And I would watch them around the Parthenon as they discussed the great and eternal issues of reality, but I wouldn't stop there. I would go on even to the great heyday of the Roman Empire. And I would see developments around there through various emperors and leaders, but I wouldn't stop there. I would even come up to the day of the Renaissance and get a quick picture of all that the Renaissance did for the cultural and aesthetic life of man, but I wouldn't stop there. I would even go by the way that the man for whom I'm named had his habitat. And I would watch Martin Luther as he tacked his 95 theses on the door at the Church of Wittenberg, but I wouldn't stop there. I would come on up even to 1863 and watch a vacillating president by the name of Abraham Lincoln finally come to the conclusion that he had to sign the Emancipation Proclamation, but I wouldn't stop there. or even come up to the early 30s and see a man grappling with the problems of the bankruptcy of his nation, come with an eloquent cry that we have nothing to fear but fear itself. But I wouldn't stop there. Strangely enough, I would turn to the Almighty and say, if you allow me to live just a few years in the second half of the 20th century, I will be happy. Now, that's a strange statement to make because the world is all messed up. The nation is sick. Trouble is in the land. Confusion all around. That's a strange statement. But I know somehow that only when it is dark enough can you see the stars. And I see God working in this period of the 20th century in a way that men in some strange way are responding. Something is happening in our world. The masses of people are rising up. And wherever they are assembled today, whether they are in Johannesburg, South Africa, Nairobi, Kenya, Accra, Ghana, New York City, Atlanta, Georgia, Jackson, Mississippi, or Memphis, Tennessee, the cry is always the same, we want to be free. Another reason that I'm happy to live in this period is that we have been forced to a point where we are going to have to grapple with the problems that men have been trying to grapple with through history, but the demands didn't force them to do it. Survival demands that we grapple with them. Men for years now have been talking about war and peace. But now no longer can they just talk about it. It is no longer the choice between violence and nonviolence in this world. It's nonviolence or non-existence. That is where we are today. Also in the human rights revolution, if something isn't done and done in a hurry to bring the colored people of the world out of their long years of poverty, their long years of hurt and neglect, the whole world is doomed. Now, I'm just happy that God has allowed me to live in this period to see what is unfolding. And I'm happy that he's allowed me to be in Memphis. I can remember when Negroes were just going around, as Ralph has said so often, scratching where they didn't itch and laughing when they were not tickled. But that day is all over. We mean business now, and we are determined to gain our rightful place in God's world. And that's all this whole thing is about. We aren't engaged in any negative protest, and in any negative arguments with anybody. We are saying that we are determined to be men. We are determined to be people. We are saying, that we are God's children. And if we are God's children, we don't have to live like we are forced to live. Now, what does all of this mean in this great period of history? It means that we've got to stay together. We've got to stay together and maintain unity. You know, whenever Pharaoh wanted to prolong the period of slavery in Egypt, he had a favorite formula for doing it. What was that? He kept the slaves fighting among themselves. But whenever the slaves get together, something happens in Pharaoh's court, and he cannot hold the slaves in slavery. When the slaves get together, that's the beginning of getting out of slavery. Now let us maintain unity. Secondly, let us keep the issues where they are. The issue is injustice. The issue is the refusal of Memphis to be fair and honest in its dealings with its public servant who happened to be sanitation worker. Now we've got to keep attention on that. That's always the problem with a little violence. You know what happened the other day, and the press dealt only with the window breaking. Read the article. They very seldom got around to mentioning the fact that 1,300 sanitation workers are on strike and that Memphis is not being fair to them and that Mayor Loeb is in dire need of a doctor. They didn't get around to that. How we're going to march again, and we've got to march again in order to be the way it is supposed to be. Force everybody to see that there are 1,300 of God's children here suffering. Sometimes going hungry, going through dark and dreary nights, wondering how things are going to come out. That's the issue. We've got to say to the nation, we know how it's coming out. When people get caught up with that which is right and they are willing to sacrifice for it, there is no stopping for it. Shout of victory. We aren't going to let any mace stop us. We are masters in our nonviolent movement in disarming police forces. They don't know what to do. I've seen them so often. I remember in we were in that majestic struggle there. We would move out of the 16th Street Baptist Church day after day. By the hundreds, we would move out, and Bill Connor would tell them to send the dogs for us. And they did come. But we just went before the dogs singing, "Ain't gonna let nobody turn me around." on the next would say, turn the fire hoses on. As I said to you the other night, Bull Connor didn't know history. He knew a kind of physics that somehow didn't relate to the transphysics that we knew about. And that was the fact that there was a certain kind of fire that no water could put out. And we went before the fire hose. We had known water. If we were Baptist or some other denomination, we had been immersed. If we were Methodist and some other, we had been sprinkled, but we knew water. That couldn't stop us. And we just went on before the dogs, and we would look at them, and we'd go on before the water hoses, and we would look at it. And we just go on singing, over my head, I see freedom in there. Then we would be thrown into paddy wagons, and sometimes we would stack them there like sardines in a can. They would throw us in, and old Bull would say, take them off. They did, and we would just go on in the paddy wagon singing, we shall overcome. And every now and then we'd get in jail, and we'd see the jailer looking through the windows, being moved by our prayer and being moved by our words and our song. There was a power there which Bull Connor couldn't adjust to. And so we ended up transforming Bull into a steer, and we won our struggle in Birmingham.